Thanks, Hal, and thanks to Pete and to Hal for inviting me. I'm glad to talk about a little different, but of a highly diverse group of organisms. That was the assignment, beetles. I've only worked on a few species of beetles in my career, but I'm going to try to give an overview of what's going on with food attractants and research and applications. We just hit any button here to
hit the mouse
on the left? Okay. All right, for the sake of this talk, okay, food is the same essentially as host material. Okay, we're going to be talking about semiochemicals, pheromones, signals from other species that are from the larval host plants in general and that are attractive to adult beetles in many of the cases I'm going to use as examples. Now, there are, of course, cases we can think of adult beetles that are attracted to non-larval hosts, plants that give some sort of food perhaps to an adult, but they are known in some cases. But the material may be used by adults, such as nectar or pollen, but I'm not going to talk about those. Adult beetles may need energy from food sources that are host plants, but it's not as prevalent as in some of the cases we've heard about today with moths and with flies and wasps and bees that we haven't heard about yet. It doesn't mean that they don't need the energy, don't use the energy. Many of the beetles I'm going to discuss are long-lived. They certainly will take advantage of the food that they get when they, say, bore into a tree or into some phloem. But basically, they'll stop for a while, and before that, they're attracted to other things. So today, briefly, I'm going to just express the hypothesis that I think has already been stated, that these systems evolve and are maintained in adult behaviors for certain reasons. I'm going to give an overview of beetle families with known cases of adult host attractants, and there's many of the big ones, you might imagine. I'm then going to go into some case studies of the more prevalent work with current applications or applications that are certainly hoped for in the future. My own area of research for the last 15, 18 years has been stored product entomology, so I am going to talk about some specific cases from my research program on stored product beetles and briefly some conclusions. So what about the evolution of adult attractants used by beetles? And it's all about, as we talk about proximate and ultimate causation, so ultimately it's about individual reproductive fitness, reproductive success, and that would explain why we have certain observed behaviors. The mating systems of the beetles in question are generally resource-based. In other words, the actor, the one doing the behavior, is trying to secure a resource. In some cases, that may be a host plant. In the case of a female who's mated and needs to lay eggs, she would be using signals from the host plant. She may also be producing a pheromone to attract males and then choose among males for high-quality males, hence high-quality sperm. In other ways, in all these cases, we can look at it from the standpoint of the fitness of the individual who's acting in the behavior. Many beetles, of course, we have cases of females that release sex pheromones, and as I said, females then can choose among males of different quality. These females are attracted to host odors, which may then enhance male response, and there's a few examples of those I'm going to talk about. Many of the male pheromone systems, males release pheromones, many times we call these aggregation pheromones, when they're in association with host plants. The host odors many times might attract the males. The research on that is sometimes hard to demonstrate, but there are many cases where the host odors then act synergistically or in some sort of additive way with the pheromone produced by the male. And we see other males responding to this, and from an evolutionary standpoint, consider them exploiters. But from a practical standpoint, we call them aggregation pheromones, since both sexes respond. Now, just to jump sort of to the conclusion, what we're going to see here then is host plant odors may attract one or both sexes of a beetle species, sometimes very subtly, sometimes in large groups. Now, whether they're attractive or not by themselves, host odors many times will synergistically or additively add to the response of insects to insect-produced pheromones. Monitoring programs on the applied side now have been developed using traps and lures There are some broad spectrum host plant odors, food odors for the sake of the symposium, that are very useful for detecting in the cases that I think are real success stories in the cases of exotic pests. And mass trapping or attract and kill methods have been implemented or being proposed or researched at this time. So what families seem to have good examples of attractants? And this is a little bit evolutionary from the most derived to the more primitive and also historical. True weevils have had cases of odors. Scalidity, I'll use the traditional term. I know that for the purists out there, they're actually curculionids, but the bark beetles or scalidids are well known for their host attractants and pheromones. Brucidae, I'm really not going to cover. I'm just mentioning it. They do have sex pheromones, and there's been some hint of host odor attraction. Scarabs, well known for attraction to plant volatiles, many of them not associated with the larval food, sometimes floral odors. I will not cover them in any detail. Cerambycids, I want to spend a little bit of time on, longhorn beetles, because they do have, there's been a lot of research recently, especially with critical quarantine or exotic pests, on host tree odors and also pheromone biology with cerambycids. Same thing with buprestids. We've had some serious, or at least one serious pest that's a buprestid. Still ongoing research there. Bostricids have been studied mainly from the stored grain standpoint. They have known aggregation pheromones and very important host plant synergists. Anabeads, another wood boring family, has known sex pheromones, and host plants are host plant odors play a role. Chrysomelids, I'm hoping there's some chrysomelid folks out there. There's been some really interesting recent work that has involved plant odors but also pheromones as well. Nidadulids, a large body of knowledge I'm going to cover in about one slide, but with homage to Bob Bartelt and others. Cucugids and sylvanids have been worked on from both the forest entomology standpoint and the stored grain standpoint. Clarids are predatory family. I have them here mainly because they take advantage of the same odors that their prey are using. I'm not going to cover them either. Tenebrionids, we've done some work with Tribolium, and so there's work there that I'll be reviewing. And lastly, Dermestids, I thought I might say something, but I won't. The adults are short-lived. They use sex pheromones for the most part. However, the food volatiles are very important in response of larvae. So for the most part, I guess I kind of reviewed it. I am going to talk on scalidids. We're going to talk a little bit more on cerambycids, buprestids, and then I'll concentrate on some of the stored product beetle groups. Okay, historically, one of the famous weevils is the cotton boll weevil, as far as one of the first aggregation pheromones described. But when it came to, quote, host plant or food odors, Dick Dickens put out a patent in 1992 that talked about these green leaf volatiles as enhancing response to the boll weevil pheromone and other insects, which happen to be some important ones like medfly and European elm bark beetle. But you will see these, and we've seen these compounds already today and some more, and I'll just keep referring to them as the GLVs. We got hexanol, different hexanols, hexanal, different hexanals, different levels of unsaturation, and that should be a hyphen, the so-called green leaf volatiles. Now, on the forestry side, weevils have been studied quite a bit with regard to host plant odors, and Hylobius pine weevils, there's the one in Europe, the Hylobius abietes, and we have Hylobius pales here in the, North America. Turns out that the monoterpenes from pine resin are highly attractive to both sexes. So when you take resin or pitch out of a pine tree, you can fractionate that into what's called turpentine and rosin. And the turpentine contains the monoterpene hydrocarbons, which are actually like a solvent for the gooier stuff, the stickier stuff. And there's lots of examples of use of routine trapping and monitoring, and even some cases of attract and kill. In what most of us would think about as bark beetles and also ambrosia beetles, the scalidity, there's many cases of host plant synergists that are well known for optimizing response to beetle-produced pheromones. One of the first, the historical example was actually one of the first bark beetle pheromones described for the western pine beetle, Dendrocnus brevicomus. The paper in Science by Wood and Silverstein and others indicated that the host compound myrcene was critical to synergize response to the beetle compounds. Around the same time, maybe a year or two later, also published in Science, was alpha pinene being critical for response of southern pine beetle to the bicyclic ketal frontalin. However, there are many species of sclidids, I say some here, that are known to respond only to host odors. And combinations of turpentine and ethanol turn out to be a broad spectrum attraction. Now, ethanol is derived from the host plant, but it has to do with the stress of the plant or the degradation of the plant material. Now, this graph has some information in it that I didn't intend when I first put it in, but I couldn't find my original slides. I'm going to talk about response of the black turpentine beetle, which I worked on several years ago, Dendrocnus terebrans, to host odors and pheromones. The pheromone of interest is considered F here, frontalin. It's produced by females. What I'm lacking in this experiment is I'm not showing response to F alone, but trust me, at the doses we were using, it would be very low. And also we were using a low dose of turpentine. So we look at female response, male response. Response to turpentine was relatively low. We were testing the inhibitor, verbenone. I might mention more about that later. But if you look here, the response of frontalin and turpentine of females was greatly enhanced over turpentine alone. And being a female-produced compound, look at the response of males, was about double that of females. And so we even were talking about this just to get the whole mating adaptation thing in here, that this is really a sex pheromone. And verbenone, in fact, did turn off this response. So another interesting thing is verbenone is an oxidation product from alpha pinene. So it is derived from the host plant, although usually bioconverted within the beetle or the microorganisms. Now, what about field response of beetles alone just to turpentine and ethanol? So we've got three different experiments here done. This was done in Florida. We've got the black turpentine beetle. This is the Pales weevil, Hylobius pales, as an example of one down here, and another sort of weevil in the same guild, Pachylobius pisciforus. So releasing turpentine only, which again is a combination of maybe six or so major monoterpene hydrocarbons, for the black turpentine beetle gave a so-so response. This is an average beetle per trap per day, let's say, replication of six traps and maybe 10 days. Ethanol alone, the turpentine beetle did not respond to, but you see when we combine turpentine and ethanol, we do get what I would consider a synergistic effect of about a tripling in response. For the Paley's weevil, they respond quite well to turpentine alone, not very well to ethanol alone, but also show this very nice synergistic response. Okay, so this is not unusual for lots of conifer-infesting insects, but we do see what appears to be maybe an ecological difference in the use of ethanol as a signal. Pachylobius responded okay to turpentine alone, virtually no response to ethanol, and in the combination, it was like the ethanol wasn't there. So no real impact of ethanol. So again, ethanol is a signal of a more advanced stage of host decomposition or stress or damage, and we believe the insects can pick up on that. To go a little bit further with that, here are some very interesting insects. There are several thousand species of ambrosia beetles in the tribes Zyliberinae. This is Zyliberus ambrosia beetles, also trapped in North Florida, to the same sorts of treatments. And I should say that these are all going to be females that we captured in funnel traps. This is a species, and all of these species are haplodiploid in sex determination. They have usually just one flightless male that they mate, that is produced in a brood. You can see down here the in the log they're feeding on fungi that grows in their tunnels, and they produce maybe one male and anywhere from 10 to 20 females. So sisters mate their brothers and emerge carrying sperm, and here in the case of Zyliberus pubescens responded okay to turpentine alone, a little bit to ethanol alone, but a huge response. They really needed that combination. So this species was looking for some signal of something like a pine tree that was in some level of decomposition. This is our conjecture based on that result, a really huge number to the combination. Whereas in the same traps, capturing a congener, Zyliberus affinis, very low response to turpentine only. We could, and I'm not showing a blank trap here, but it would be similar to a zero. Ethanol by itself did very well with Cylibris affinis, and with the turpentine, it actually reduced it a little bit. This was a solution that reduced the evaporation of ethanol. So for affinis, it turns out that ethanol is a good enough signal, and if you look at the host records for affinis, it does attack conifers and hardwoods, whereas pubescens is generally associated with conifers, and maybe some of my scalidid experts in the audience would agree. So the signal is everything, and these can be used in different ways. There's more to say about alpha-pinene and ethanol lures. Now, instead of saying turpentine, the primary component in turpentine is alpha-pinene, and it's the first monoterpene hydrocarbon to come out in chromatography. Traps baited with mixtures of pinene and ethanol have become key tools in regulatory surveys for exotic forest pests. And specifically, these sorts of traps have helped to delineate the distribution of important insects such as the European twig beetles, Tomicus, which were introduced in the United States probably 10 or 20 or 30 years before they ever found them. But once they started to set up these traps, aphis was finding them all over the place and was able to determine where they were, and probably not going to get rid of them, but they're here for a while. New exotic, one interesting offshoot though of this study is with all the traps being out there set up by the CAPS program and aphis, there were discoveries then of new exotic insects and determining where they were and getting a feel for their impact. So it was very important to have those studies. Moving on the list to cerambycids, recently there's been some very interesting research on semiochemicals, and we have cerambycid pests of both conifers and hardwoods. They fall into different groups. You know, some species will simply find mates, sometimes on non-host plants, and there are cases of feeding on pollen and nectar where they will assemble and find mates. Food odors have not been elaborated for these. There are others that use long-range sex pheromones, so a female may find a host by some way, release a sex pheromone, and a male responds. And there has been shown cases where this response could be enhanced by host odors. Now, this is from a tree, a log, what have you. They're going for larger diameter woody material. There are also other cases of both sexes where they assemble on the host, on the log or the down tree, in response to general host volatile cues. And there are some cerambycids that are known to respond to pheromones of co-colonizing species. In other words, they are exploiting the signal from other species using the resource. So back to some of our turpentine work that we did. The genus Monochamus is well known as the pine sawyers. And here shows, again, differences in two species in their response to turpentine and ethanol. Monochamus carolinensis, that's not it, that's Scutellatus, but it's a nice shot of a male there, responded okay to turpentine only, ethanol not much, and really no effect with the combination. So turpentine was a good signal for finding a down pine tree. Monochamus titillator, another major species in the southeast, responds in low levels to turpentine only, not much to ethanol, but was dramatically, at least three or fourfold, enhanced in its response to the solution of turpentine ethanol. Maybe an ecological difference, maybe something needing a pine tree that's a little further along. This a little bit more recently, done by Jeremy Allison, one of John Borden's students, is just showing, and it's a little hard maybe to delineate, we've got three experiments as you go down the page, and looking just at the response of different Monochamus in the Pacific Northwest, I assume British Columbia. We have unbaited traps. HB refers to host blend, okay? So this is a blend of monoterpenes, and in many cases, some cases, for example, Scutellatus, you will see significant attraction between a blank and the host blend. So they are responding to host odors in these cases. Here again, a big one in this experiment, three for Scutellatus to the host blend. Now, the other interesting finding from Jeremy's work is we have these beetle pheromone blends, beetle 2, beetle 1, or both blends of beetle pheromones, which are actually IPS compounds, some dendrocnidus compounds, and you can see where they took advantage. These are these longhorn beetles are exploiting the chemical signals from bark beetles and get even a bigger response. So this is all to do with the community of insects that are attacking dead and dying pine trees in the forest and what kind of signals are out there. Asian longhorn beetle. Okay, this is where some of the more recent work has been done. I'd hate to say that it's all complete and that we know the true answer, because I know there was some controversy in the research. So, but leave it to say that there has at least been a patent filed for a male-specific aggregation pheromone, and my sense is that it does work pretty consistently in the field. This is, of course, an exotic introduced species. However, collections of host volatiles and representative of host volatiles will attract both sexes, and I believe that this also will synergize response to the sex pheromone. And USDA APHIS and various state agencies have undertaken aggressive detection methods, also involving track and kill, and then sanitation, removing infested trees. And maybe it's safe to say that Asian longhorn beetle is at least something people are living more comfortably with and have a little bit of a better handle on. It's not eliminated by any means. The more serious issue to forest health in North America is probably the emerald ash borer, and there's been a lot of work on the chemical ecology of this insect, and we've heard several papers actually at the meeting this week. The GLVs, the green leaf volatiles that I was mentioning, the hexanols, hexanals, have been identified, as well as several essential oils such as the monoterpenes, and here I've listed them, alpha-cubabine, alpha-copaine, 7-epi-sesquithugene, trans-beta-caryophyllene, and alpha-caryophyllene, as sort of a blend of essential oils that are attractive to the EAB. Turns out that an easy, or let's, I don't know, easy, relatively abundant commercial source of these essential oils can be found in manuka oil and also something called phoebe oil, which provide a majority of these in an adequate source. And I guess what we saw at the beginning of the week were some very good responses to the oils and also to traps. And so there's been work done with trap design, trap color, and what have you. And so the folks working on emerald ash borer are getting a better handle on response and where they have to go, but I think we're still a ways off from significant control. Well, here's my homage to Bob Bartelt and Allard Cossey and their group. The sap beetles, there's been a lot of work done elaborating the pheromone systems, mainly of Carpophilus, Glyscrocrylus, and others. Bob's group has found novel male-produced aggregation pheromones in the nidodulids. They've gone on now to chrysomelids and other things. Host odors are important. And just briefly to show you, it's now we're getting maybe a little closer to some of the moth-type stuff and what happens with sugar, because what Bartelt found is that dough, fresh bread dough, is highly attractive to sap beetles. Here's Glyscrocrylus and two species of sap beetles responding just to dough alone, and in fact in this experiment they weren't responding to the pheromone very well. And it has been an idea. Now here is some sap beetles in Australia where they're responding to more of the other types of fermentation products from fruit. So here's an idea for an attract and kill bait station that involves rotting fruit and laced with an insecticide or with a biocide of some sort to attract beetles in and do a mass killing. So that sort of work is going on. And I have, what, 1 minute, maybe 2 minutes?
Yeah,
1.5 minutes? Okay. Well, in Tribolium, we have a male-produced aggregation pheromone, and we're not supposed to talk too much about pheromones here. But the main point is that host odors will synergize response to the pheromone, and host odors alone are attractive. This point here was to say that they have to have food to even produce the pheromone, and they won't produce it so much in the presence of the volatiles, so they actually have to be feeding, and that's what's going on in this graph here, production of dimethyldecanal by single males. And also, what's very important, although it may be not synergistic, but there's an additive effect, when you put grain-based oils, and this is in a bioassay with traps, you cannot see necessarily response to the oil alone. You do see a response to pheromone, but oil and pheromone works very well. The lesser grain borer is a very important pest of cereal grains. It is a bostricid, it's a wood borer, but it's been adapted to grains. And we've studied this from the standpoint of, is it existing in the wild and could it feed on other foods besides grain? But it turns out our lab colony is highly adapted to grain. This is from a lab bioassay on response time two food odors, and you can see that we're rearing it on wheat. The shortest response time was to wheat compared to all of these other potential food sources. And it's a male-produced pheromone, remember. The males responded quicker than the females. So that's one key there, because they find the food, they feed on the food, produce pheromone, they attract females and the other males. Here's a field study in which we put, this is the work of my student Peter Eddy, we put a single male on a little bit of various host odors, and then we're just looking at response of females to this in a trap. And again, one single male did very well on wheat, and we're getting a little bit more females, and you can see female bias in all the other ones. We're just going to get the hook coming up here any minute. This is our latest work, and so on the cigarette beetle, which we tested in a two-choice bioassay. This is the work of my postdoc, Rosanna Maruf. But just to say that even though it's a cigarette beetle, they responded better to capsicum, okay? Chili peppers, better than to tobacco. Of course, this other nagging thing is the Japanese company has a lure that's as good as anything that we've done. We were able to, I'll just go right through this, basically show that you can get an enhanced response to the pheromones, sericornin, when you combine either chili powder, chili extract, to the pheromone. And I apologize for going over.
Take two of us to get you down.
Yeah, okay. So with that, thanks again to the organizers, and thanks for your attention.